Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 19, 2018. Amnesty International releases a new report accusing the South Sudan Army of committing atrocities in July.
This is the most, I think, violent government offensive we've seen this year. I mean, certainly in the past, including in there in Miami, in the past, we've seen similar violence, similar sort of, you know, widespread kind of scorched earth campaigns.
And the head of the UN peacekeepers says recruitment of child soldiers is still going on in South Sudan.
In advance of the integration of Tabandeng's forces into the SPLA, we also understand that there is a scramble to assemble fighters, including children, while we have yet to confirm any disengagement of forces in accordance with the timelines of the revised agreement.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Amnesty International researchers visited South Sudan in July before the latest peace deal was signed and spoke to about 100 displaced persons from Leer and Mayendid counties in the former unity state. The researchers say there is a deliberate and systemic intent to displace civilians and depopulate villages using fear and violence. Ayen Deng Bior has details from Washington.
South Sudan's government forces shot civilians, burned elderly and young children alive, ran civilians over with armored vehicles, gang-raped women, and hung people from trees and rafters, according to a report released today by Amnesty International. Joanne Mariner is the report's co-author, as well as the group's senior crisis advisor.
This is the most, I think, violent government offensive we've seen this year. I mean, certainly in the past, including in there in Miami, in the past, we've seen similar violence, similar sort of, you know, widespread kind of scorched earth campaigns.
Mariner says the crimes documented, including targeting women and children, widespread looting and destruction of civilian property in Leer and Mayandit, are systematic in nature and could amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Outside of the towns, that is, in really the rural areas, the villages where most South Sudanese live, they're more or less controlled by the opposition. So it was an effort to depopulate opposition-held areas, to push civilians, I think, into government-controlled areas or even, you know, out of the country. It definitely resulted in widespread displacement, tens of thousands of people being displaced.
Researchers spoke to about 100 civilians in July in Nyal and Kutit in Unity State's Panyajar County to find out what happened during the government offensive, which began in April. The report documents the fate of an elderly man in Thokwan village in Bor Payam, who was allegedly burned alive in his house. Someone else interviewed said he found his wife hung from rafters in her house. Another woman said her two young children were killed. People who fled their homes to escape violence told Amnesty International they were hunted in swamps and some of them were killed by government soldiers. A girl as young as 8 was gang-raped on Leer County's Mare Island, according to one interviewee. Another interviewee said she witnessed the rape of a 15-year-old boy. The harrowing accounts are all documented in Amnesty International's latest report entitled "Anything That Was Breathing Was Killed." Civilians interviewed by Amnesty put the blame for the alleged brutal attacks on government soldiers and allied militia, some who were wearing uniforms, although other interviewees said they witnessed attacks carried out by men in plain clothes. Mariner said the violence documented in the report was strategic.
Particularly worrying is they seem to have been carried out with an absolute intent to displace civilians and to render the areas, the civilian villages in which they lived, uninhabitable. So we saw food being used as a weapon of war. We saw deliberate destruction of food stocks and a real effort to push out civilians and keep them out of these areas.
The government and UN agencies declared a famine in Unity State's Leer and Mayendid counties in February last year. A joint press release by the World Food Program, UNICEF, and the Food and Agriculture Organization last year described the famine as man-made and said years of violence, including an upsurge in violence in 2016, devastated food production. Mariner says the recurrence of violence in Unity State this year indicates a lack of accountability.
One of the points of the report was to show that in this area, this was not the first wave of attacks. There have been similar aggressive campaigns in 2014 and 2015, and none of the leaders, the known leaders in charge of those campaigns, have been prosecuted. So, I mean, the really predictable result of that kind of impunity is continuing violence. And it underscores the real need for the prosecution of these war criminals.
South Sudan Army spokesman Major General Lul Rai Kwong dismissed the report as a collection of broad statements that do not carry water at all, he said. He pointed to recent legal cases like this month's Terrain Hotel verdict, where a military court in Juba sentenced 10 soldiers to prison for raping foreign aid workers and murdering a local journalist in an attack over 2 years ago at the Terrain Hotel.
These are clear examples that the government of the Republic of South Sudan in general, the SPLA and the National Army in particular, does not condone impunity, contrary to what is being alleged and contrary to what is being said on global stage by Amnesty International and other international institutions.
Amnesty International published a 2016 report on South Sudan, which identified four individuals who they say should be investigated on suspicion of responsibility of war crimes and crimes against humanity. A letter from the rights group to then SPLA Chief of Staff Paul Malong in June 2016 has gone unanswered, according to Amnesty. South Sudan's warring parties signed a peace deal last Wednesday, a move observers hope will end the nearly five-year conflict. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan government denies Amnesty International's report that its forces and allied militia committed atrocities including rape and murder. The government spokesman says the report is, quote, concocted by people who earn their livelihood at the expense of South Sudanese. ONN Walter Solomon has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe called the Amnesty International report fake after an extraordinary cabinet meeting. Makwe told reporters in Juba the report's authors are warmongers.
These are people who are living on the blood of the people of South Sudan. These are people who keep on sending side reports so that the international community is made to believe that South Sudan is not at peace.
Makwe questioned the report's authenticity, adding that while meeting in Khartoum, negotiators to the peace deal heard reports that South Sudan was, quote, on fire and that people were running away from Juba.
Where do they get these reports? Because whatever violation which is done is sent to the JMCC. The JMCC goes there to verify, not individuals who sit in the hotels and write fake reports.
Amnesty International called on South Sudan's government to end all human rights abuses and to establish immediately the hybrid court as stipulated in the 2015 peace agreement. The organization is also calling on the United Nations Security Council to enforce the long-overdue arms embargo that was adopted in July. Asked if the government will investigate Amnesty International's reports that government soldiers burnt people alive and gang-raped girls, boys and women, Makwe says there is no need to do so.
What they do is that they prepare the report, they send them, and then the reports come back to us through the social media. These are not reports, these are fake reports, because if you are writing a general report, you are supposed to copy the person against whom you are writing. But this has not been happening. So we don't need to investigate into them.
Makwe says the Kiir administration receives and acknowledges official reports from agencies mandated to ensure accountability in government. For VOA News, I am ONN Walter Solomon in Juba.
Women's rights activists staged a march today in Juba to demand for the establishment of a hybrid court to bring human rights violators to justice. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Baka women beat their traditional drums as they sang a peace song and danced rhythmically at the John Garang Mausoleum during the peace march one day ahead of International Peace Day. In Juba Arabic, the women sing, "Let the peace come so that we can have unity and be happy. Our children have died. This peace must end our wailing. Women's groups organized today's march, which kicked off at Juba's Buluk Playground and ended at the John Garang Mausoleum, accompanied by police band. The women carried banners reading, "Let South Sudan resurrect with peace," and "South Sudanese women need peace now, not tomorrow." Organizer Mary Justo Tombe says women want more than lip service from their leaders.
Signing of peace is a good thing, but the actual realization of peace is when it is implemented. That is when we will feel that peace is in place. And we urge that all the parties to the conflict and all the parties to the agreement should really have a political will.
Florence Kiden, who also marched today, says she is not happy to hear that the latest ceasefire has already been broken.
When I heard that there is violence in Yei, I was not happy because I said, why is it so? Because peace is signed and people are dying when the agreement is signed. Why is it so? Is this peace really the right one, or it is just on the paper? Because now we are seeing so many violations are going on. My message to these two people who signed the peace, let them come together. Let them see the suffering of their people. Every day women cry on the streets. People are crying, but nothing comes. They have to care for us because they are our leaders.
Demonstrator Christine Kiden says the transitional government of national unity must show its commitment to forming a hybrid court, as is stated in Chapter 5 of the peace agreement.
Peace without justice is not a peace. We need the justice. Peace should be, and the justice should be there. And the accountability should be.
Demonstrator Grace Alexander says she is not sure the hybrid court will work in South Sudan.
Because since we are just living in this situation of killing each other, even my own brother was killed here in South Sudan because of politics. Then as a woman also, we have a lot of challenges. Like in the area, you know, the unknown gunmen, they will just come and rape the woman. Even though she's pregnant, they will just sleep. 5 or 6 people sleep with the woman and she's pregnant. So I don't know if the court will bring these people one day to book.
Rachel Nyandeng, the presidential advisor on gender issues, says South Sudan should learn to protect human rights.
In a world where many people suffer under conditions of abuses of their basic human rights, it is crucial that human rights are promoted, protected, and worked with.
The U.S. State Department last month urged the Juba government to set up the hybrid court to ensure justice is served for those who have carried out mass killings of civilians and other perpetrators of human rights abuses. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the head of the UN mission in South Sudan has some strong words for President Kiir and Riek Machar. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the most important life lesson you would want your children to learn?
That anything you are given, you shouldn't see it as little, because it's when you do your best for the little you have, that's when you get more opportunities.
Yeah, it is good to learn traditional dance and to keep on our children also to know how our traditional dance is.
I would like to teach them about integrity. That is doing the right thing even when nobody is watching. At the end of the day, you'll be rewarded.
I would like them to be very good citizens and very responsible, of course, with a career. Just naturally, yeah? Everybody is born to be responsible, to be doing something. I think it wouldn't be wise for someone to live and is hopeless.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A senior UN official in South Sudan says the parties to the revitalized peace agreement must build trust and confidence among themselves. The special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan says despite signing a peace deal last week, the government and opposition forces still don't trust each other. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Addressing a news conference in Juba today, UNMISS Chief David Sierra says a key ingredient is missing from the talks led up to signing the peace deal.
That's trust. Those who signed the agreement have in the past been former friends, but also have been former foes. And from my discussions with them, suspicion is still quite widespread. So a lot of work needs to be done to encourage trust between the parties, as well as the parties and the people of South Sudan.
Implementation of the deal was supposed to start on the day it was signed. The agreement requires the parties to implement ceasefire arrangements, including disengagement and separation of forces in close proximity, withdrawal of allied troops, and opening of humanitarian corridors within 3 days of signing the deal. The agreement was signed a week ago. Sierra says UNMISS has not seen any concrete steps by either the government or opposition parties demonstrating goodwill and a commitment to ending the conflict.
We've already seen some flare-ups of fighting in southern Equatoria, where CTSAM is now investigating alleged violations of the ceasefire in the area.
Sierra says he assured government and opposition leaders of the UN's readiness to help in carrying out genuine peace-building and reconciliation activities during the implementation of the agreement. But he says the UN expects to see a realistic plan by the parties on how they will achieve peace and stability across the country.
We also need to see clear evidence that all of the warring parties have the political will to stop the violence. Those who signed the peace agreement last week were required to disengage their forces within 72 hours.
Sierra is calling on all stakeholders to support the deal's implementation, saying the more quickly there is peace, the more the people can get back to their homes and produce their own food.
As with all agreements and all peace agreements, they're not perfect, but it's the only one that we have at the table now, and for that reason, we all need to work together to ensure that it is genuinely inclusive and endures so that people can finally enjoy peace and prosperity in South Sudan.
Sierra says he will be traveling this week to attend the UN General Assembly meetings in New York, where he will discuss the role the UN mission in South Sudan can play in implementing the peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Reports of fighting have surfaced in several parts of South Sudan just days after the signing of the revitalized peace agreement. The United Nations Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, Jean-Pierre Lacroix, says the warring parties are still attacking each other.
Reports indicate that these hostilities are in response to alleged government attempts to install local authorities in opposition-controlled areas. Both sides appear to have mobilized reinforcements to support these operations to secure territory.
Speaking at a briefing of the UN Security Council in New York yesterday, Lacroix said the fighting is reportedly taking place in Central Equatoria and Unity States. Lacroix told the Security Council heavy clashes took place in Jumla Center in Budu in Kapure County. He said hostilities were also reported in Kinderi and Mangalatore in Kajokeji.
On the 15th of September, small-scale clashes were also reported around Ning in Gid County in Unity between SPLA and in opposition forces and Tabandangay aligned forces. These incidents are reportedly associated with the push by Tabandang to consolidate influence in his stronghold of Gid County. We remain concerned about the potential for further clashes where government and opposition forces are in close proximity, particularly in parts of central and western Equatoria, Unity, and western Bahr el-Ghazal.
The UN Special Envoy for South Sudan, Nicholas Haysom, told Security Council members that the ongoing fighting is a real concern for regional efforts to bring peace to South Sudan.
No agreement can last in the face of continuing violations for which there is no penalty or no consequence. This risks a response by South Sudanese as to what is different in this agreement from the previous failed agreements.
Hersem says there has been increased fighting in advance of the integration of the Taban Deng's forces to the South Sudan Army.
Notwithstanding the efforts of the IGAD facilitation team, we note that there are still a few but potentially significant parties that continue to express reservations on the text. In addition, there are some substantive governance issues that the text contemplates will be resolved in due course. One relates to the number of subnational states, and this issue concerns the very geography of tribal authority and control.
He said there is little interest in the international community to fund the ongoing effort unless the country's leaders show genuine commitment to make their guns fall silent.
Financial resources, not least to provide for the immediate cantonment of the various forces. From my engagement with significant potential donors, they have shown no or little appetite to fund this process unless there is clear provision to ensure transparency and propriety in financial transactions, including accountability for past misappropriation of public funds.
That was Nicholas Hersem, the UN Special Envoy for South Sudan, addressing the UN Security Council members yesterday in New York. We now turn to Cameroon, where thousands of parents are withdrawing their children from schools in the English-speaking regions after armed men attacked and wounded dozens of people in their institutions. Separatists fighting for the independence of the English-speaking regions of Cameroon had warned parents not to send their kids to school, stating that they could not assure safety. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Boya, South Cameroon.
Dozens of villagers and parents searched the forested areas around Sase, a neighborhood in the southwestern town of Boya, early Tuesday, looking for students who fled after armed men attacked the St. Joseph's College late Sunday. Several dozen people were wounded in the attack. Senator Charles Mbelamoki, a lawmaker from the English-speaking southwest region of Cameroon, who is leading the villagers, say they are happy they found the three students who were still missing.
With the assistance of some good Samaritans, we picked up some of the students who had escaped. Some of them had wounds. Some of them were so traumatized. Some did not know where they were. Some were in their night dresses, pyjamas, and so on. In fact, it was quite pathetic, emotional, but all of the student body of SASE that were in school have been adequately accounted for.
Bernard Okalia Bilai, governor of the southwest region of Cameroon, said an unknown number of armed men attacked the school, its students and staff. He said some of the children, with ages ranging from 9 to 17 years, received machete wounds and others were shot with locally made guns, but fortunately, none were killed. After the incident, parents withdrew their children from the school, which has more than 500 students. Half a dozen other schools in the English-speaking Southwest urged parents to take their children home. Other parents were already withdrawing their kids. Teacher John Lum, who left with his three kids from St. Joseph's College, SASE, says he does not trust the governor's assurance that they will be safe.
The governor himself, who is saying that people should stay back, that they are protected, he is moving around with soldiers protecting him. Will the soldiers protect all the people? That's the reason why I cannot stay. I have to leave.
Cameroon's Minister of Secondary Education, Professor Nalova Lyonga, is pleading with school administrators in safer locations to accept the displaced children, even if their classrooms are congested.
Please accept all students who are transferring from the Northwest or Southwest as a result of the crisis. Accept every child who comes in and who wants to move. Address the problem further up to the ministry, to the governors, the local administration, and then send it to us. Where there is an overflow, we are definitely going to move the rest of the students to some other place.
Last month, armed separatists on social media warned parents against sending their children to school. They said they could not guarantee the safety of children at school since their fighters will be in running battles with the military to stop the organization of the October 7 presidential election. At least 70 schools have been torched since crisis began in Cameroon English-speaking regions in 2016, when teachers and lawyers protested the overbearing use of the French language in the bilingual country. Separatists took over and requested the creation of an English-speaking state, and the government declared war on them. At least 300 people, including 130 soldiers and the police, have been killed. Many are missing. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Boya, Southwestern Cameroon.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Amnesty International is out with a damning report about atrocities allegedly committed by government soldiers. Researchers went to South Sudan in July and conducted interviews with about 100 displaced people from Unity States Lear and Mayendit counties. They found what they call a deliberate and systematic intent to displace civilians and render villages uninhabitable by, in some cases, shooting civilians, burning elderly and young children alive, and running over civilians with armored vehicles, according to the report. Joanne Mariner, the report's co-author, said it was the most violent government offensive this year. She says the crimes which were documented could amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. Government spokesman Michael McQuay calls the report fake and accuses the Amnesty International researchers of being warmongers. He said the government will not look into the charges detailed in the report because it already knows the report is fake. He says negotiators meeting in Khartoum for the revitalized peace deal heard similar reports of people being, quote, on fire and people running away from Juba. Amnesty called on the government to end all human rights abuses and establish immediately the hybrid court as called for in the 2015 peace agreement. And finally, women's rights activists today staged a peaceful march in Juba to urge South Sudan's leaders to work for peace and establish the hybrid court to bring human rights violators to justice. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Rio by Kebas, Tricia C, and SBZ. We have been listening to Tricia C, SBZ, and Kebas with the song Rio. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.